Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, and we have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And Jim, after three crazies yesterday that you blissfully missed as David French filled your seat yesterday, we are back on a slightly more normal schedule. But given the fact that we did not decide to do stories on Trump's ex-wife feuding with his current wife and the president challenging the Secretary of State to an IQ contest, we could have gone all crazy today, but fortunately, we can leave that fair to someone else. How are you?
I was going to say, Greg, I saved something for when I speak on CNN later today.
That's right. As you can tell, Jim joins us by phone. He's up in New York doing some work with CNN today, and CNN is actually a factor in our first martini today, our good martini, and that's that the obviously left-leaning mainstream media is putting pressure on Democrats, and in particular, the Clintons and the Obamas, to say something about the allegations, which Harvey Weinstein has essentially confirmed since he didn't really deny them, although I guess he's denied some specifics. But we know there's 8 settlements, decades worth of harassment claims. More has come out since the New York Times piece that came out late last week. So the Republicans and the Democrats talking about this, no surprise that the Republicans are over at Fox News. You've got Ronna Romney McDaniel, the Republican Party chairwoman, saying, where's Hillary Clinton? Where's she standing on this issue? She's been silent. Her silence is deafening. And that's because Weinstein contributed over $46,000 to Clinton during her presidential candidacy, as well as to HILPAC, a committee that Clinton used to support other Democrats while she was senator. He's also made massive 6-figure donations to the Clinton Foundation. And McDaniel says that Harvey Weinstein is a major bundler for the DNC, and they have embraced him. But it's not just Republicans, Jim, who are asking this and answering in a way that we're pretty happy to see. On CNN, I believe this was earlier today, Allison Camerota speaking with Clinton's running mate last year, Virginia Senator Tim Kaine.
Hillary Clinton spoke for 90 minutes last night in California, but she didn't mention Harvey Weinstein. Why not?
Look, you know, Allison, I'm nobody's press secretary. I'm a U.S. senator, and I'm telling you that sexual harassment is unacceptable, and I really think it's low-life behaviors. Hillary Clinton speaks out against sexual harassment often, and I'm sure she'll have a word to say when the time's right for her, but I don't, you know, I'm not anybody's press secretary.
Understood.
I'm telling you,
you would recommend that she do that.
Any leader should condemn this. I mean, I have a 22-year-old daughter who's starting off, you know, in the work world, and I when you read the stories about young women feeling pressured by somebody in a position of power, it makes you sick.
So the last part of that statement, obviously stronger than the first, about him not being Hillary's press secretary. And Jim, as you pointed out to me, Patty Solis Doyle was also on CNN earlier today. She was Clinton's campaign manager back the first time she ran in 2007, 2008. And she says, as long as I've known her, she really has walked the walk and talked the talk, but went on to say, personally, it is disappointing she hasn't come out and condemned Harvey Weinstein. So, Jim, what do you make of the fact that Democrats are being called on this and the fact that the Clintons and the Obama have been silent so far?
The first part is we should give credit to the other side when they deserve it. And in this case, I want to give Doyle credit. And I don't know if Tim Kaine realizes how bad he sounds, but he says, look, Hillary Clinton has always stood for women's rights. She has always stood up against this kind of behavior. She has always been very clear this is unacceptable, except for now. It's been 5 days. And I'm not even going to get into the Lewinsky scandal back then and the allegations against Bill Clinton. You would expect this would be a slam dunk. You would think she would come out and say this is absolutely unacceptable and shocking and horrifying. Many people might doubt whether she had never heard any of the stories floating around about Harvey Weinstein. I think President Obama has a slightly stronger case that would say that he's never heard of any of this stuff when he allowed his daughter to work as an intern over at the Weinstein Company. That does it for me. I don't think Obama would send his daughter into the hands of a sexual predator. But you look at this, and it is kind of good to see a broad spectrum of media, not just on the folks on the right, saying that this is a reprehensible, repulsive behavior, and you should be able to buy your way out of it with a bunch of campaign donations or something like that. And a decent number of folks on the left have said this as well. What's really kind of strange and odd are this lack of comment from Hillary Clinton. Let's just kind of do the thought exercise. If a prominent Republican donor was known for, this came out, would Hillary Clinton hesitate to make an issue of that? She's in the middle of a book tour. All of a sudden, she's not doing interviews anymore. This is a rather glaring and deeply uncomfortable silence indicating that Hillary Clinton is either afraid to speak or doesn't really, just can't bring herself to say something critical of Weinstein or afraid Weinstein will say. It's really kind of a really strange and just disconcerting silence. And even from the Obamas, you figure they'd be quick to point out that we don't accept this from anybody, even somebody who's been financially supporting us all these years. So, you know, I think it's good to see accountability being enforced on both sides and by both sides.
Yeah, I don't think it's that hard to be able to say this person was a friend, which makes it even more disappointing. This isn't a hard one. If this is a hard one for you, I'd hate to see what you'd actually do in a more complicated situation. So, but as you said, good on Camerata, and Chris Saliza wrote about this. I mean, Chris Saliza is a guy who will break down a handshake and take 24 lessons away, and most of them explaining how Trump looks bad in the handshake or something like that. So to actually do this is good on him as well. All right, let's move on to the bad martini now. And Twitter has decided what inflammatory speech is. And of course, it's a Republican's inflammatory speech. Associated Press, Republican Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn's Senate campaign announcement ad has been blocked by Twitter over a statement the abortion rights opponent makes about the sale of fetal tissue for medical research. Blackburn, who is running for the seat being opened by the retirement of Tennessee Senator Bob Corker, boasts in the ad that she stopped the sale of baby body parts. In fact, here is exactly what Blackburn says in the ad.
I'm 100% pro-life. I fought Planned Parenthood, and we stopped the sale of baby body parts. Thank God.
She was the chairwoman of a select committee following those undercover videos that came out a couple years ago. A Twitter representative told the candidate's vendors on Monday that the statement was, quote, deemed an inflammatory statement that is likely to evoke a strong negative reaction. So obviously Blackburn is trying to fundraise off this. Apparently she can use the video on other platforms, of course. Jim, if statements on Twitter are pulled for likely evoking a strong negative reaction, Twitter's going to go away.
I was going to say, you kind of wonder if these people who work at Twitter ad sales and standards and practices, have they ever used Twitter? have they ever been on it? Have they noticed that if, God for you, if you're Jewish, you're going to get all kinds of terrible, we're going to put you in the ovens, tweets sent your direction. There's all kinds of creepy Nazis and vulgar sexual, all kinds of verbal abuse and things that you would never tolerate to somebody face to face. That's I don't want to say it's Twitter's bread and butter, but there certainly is tons of it. Many people have said that when they try reporting it to Twitter, they're reminded of the old Public Enemy song, 911 is a joke. You know, they feel like there's absolutely no response from Twitter. But, you know, the idea that all of a sudden a congresswoman's ad with a pro-life message is going to be what sets them off and says, no, we can't have that. This is inappropriate. This is not up to our standards. On the one hand, it's kind of amusing because this is going to backfire so badly on them. I am sure Marsha Blackburn is already probably, she's probably well into six figures and perhaps on her way to seven figures of fundraising off of this particular form of censorship by Twitter. But I think just overall, I think it was Ala Pundit of Hot Air and a couple other folks are like, really, why are we on Twitter? at some point, does Twitter become worth it? If it's going to be this overt and blatant in its choice of what it deems unacceptable or inappropriate or something like that. Now, look, if they had been something where they had been stringent and dedicated and playing whack-a-mole every time there was genuinely hateful speech or genuinely offensive and indisputably horrific comments on Twitter and stuff like that, this would be a different story. But everybody who writes about politics on Twitter has time when they've been either subjected to the alt-right or crazy lefties or something like that, and they get all kinds of abuse sent their way. And nothing ever seems to be done about that. However, if it's a pro-life ad by a congressman, oh, then they'll step in. All of a sudden, then, you know, Twitter's on the attack and they figure out how they can clamp down that within 5 minutes. It's very revealing. And I think it kind of suggests that the days of Twitter may be numbered and that the aggravation of dealing with this kind of arbitrary standard is, you know, more trouble than it's worth.
The follow-up in that statement is also mind-boggling and kind of jarring because Twitter said the Blackburn campaign would be allowed to run the rest of the video if the flag statement is omitted. So apparently they just don't like pro-life statements, and or maybe they want a more detailed, explanation of how exactly Marsha Blackburn stopped it, because it's, I'm sure, not because she went after Planned Parenthood.
Having never been on Twitter before, have they ever seen a campaign ad before? Have they noticed that campaign ads don't? Well, let me lay out in extreme detail why my here's all the footnotes for all of my accusations against my account. It would be nice. It might be a better world if everybody was subjected to that. And usually you'll see in really tiny font at the bottom of the screen, you know, HR 291 or something like that. That would have that's kind of the loosest justification. My favorite is when they start using column headlines. as like look like news headlines.
Oh yeah.
This congressman is terrible or something like that. Well, it's not a news headline. It's an opinion headline. But nonetheless, that's all it takes, you know, because, you know, if the New York Times editorial board doesn't like a Republican, well, then obviously he's a bad guy, right?
Right, exactly. All right, Jim, we talked about Mike Pence and the NFL yesterday with David in one of our crazy martinis. The NFL is back in a way in our crazy martini today, and so is Jemele Hill from ESPN, and so is President Trump. Jerry Jones, the owner of the Cowboys, made it known, I believe, on Sunday that his players will stand for the anthem. Obviously, folks remember a few weeks ago, right after Trump said those things in Alabama about firing players who don't stand for the anthem, the Cowboys were in Arizona. They all took a knee, including Jerry Jones, before the anthem. Then they stood for the anthem. This time, Jerry Jones says, I'm going to bench you. I'm going to make sure you don't play if you don't stand for the national anthem. Well, Jemele Hill didn't like that, and she ultimately came to the conclusion in a series of tweets by saying that the Cowboys could be in trouble here because they have a lot of black fans, and that the fans should not put pressure on folks like Dez Bryant and Ezekiel Elliott and Dak Prescott to protest anyway and put the pressure on Jerry Jones. She says they need to go after the Cowboys' sponsors and hit the Cowboys where they are, right in the wallet. So that didn't sit very well over at ESPN. They said, hey, we just warned you about getting political on your Twitter account. You do represent us. 2 weeks suspension for you. Donald Trump pretty much gloating about that this morning, saying with Jemele Hill at the mic, it's no wonder ESPN ratings have tanked. In fact, tanked so badly it is the talk of the industry. And just in case there wasn't enough craziness involved with this, Al Sharpton now is leading a boycott of the NFL unless ESPN reinstates Jemele Hill with the incredibly ironic statement, we won't stand for this. So, Jim, apparently the boycotts come full circle now, and everyone hates the NFL.
I was about to say, Greg, to clarify for all of our listeners, so Al Sharpton is boycotting ESPN because ESPN was suspending Jemele Hill because Jemele Hill suggested that people should boycott the sponsors of the Dallas Cowboys because the owner of the Dallas Cowboys, Jerry Jones, was going to bench the players as sort of a protest or a punishment because they were boycotting the national anthem because of concerns about police brutality and things like that. This is the fifth level of Inception dream, right? You're on a boycott of a boycott of a boycott in response to a boycott of a boycott. I'm sure a lot of people in conservative world are upset with Jemele Hill this morning, and they're free to do that. Probably is one of the few people who's more upset with ESPN because I'm left again, once again, scratching my head. ESPN, did you meet Jemele Hill before you gave her the 6 p.m. Sports Center? Right, this is you. I don't think Jemele Hill is any more political than she was 6 months ago. I don't think she's any more further to the left or radical or you know, like you can disagree with her, but I don't think she's terribly different. And no doubt one of the reasons that ESPN elevated her to a fairly prominent role in the network was because they wanted her to be controversial, because they wanted her. They knew she had a strong political views. So they knew this was likely to kind of seep into the sports coverage. And it's like they told her, well, we'll cause a stir, but don't cause too much of a stir, right? Rile people up, say some controversial things, but not too much controversial things. And, you know, the idea that you are perfectly free to tell the listeners and you know, tell our viewers to make their voices heard, but don't tell them to stop watching football. What are you kidding me? We're ESPN. We have Monday Night Football. What are you doing? You know, on the one hand, she should have foreseen that this was skating on thin ice with her employer. On the other hand, I don't really understand whether ESPN can really be, you know, like you got to make up your mind. Either you're comfortable with your host making political statements or you're not. And if you're not, that's fine. And you can say, look, we're going back to sports. This is what we tout ourselves as a worldwide leader in sports. And we're going to focus on that. And, you know, tell Jemele Hill and everybody else at ESPN, look, you can be a political pundit or you can be a sports talk person, but we can't do both. We alienate too many viewers when we get too political. This is our network brand. Stick to it. Or they can say we're going to become the sports focused MSNBC, and they can go in that direction, and they can, you know, if they accept the consequences. But you can't have it both ways. I wonder how the NFL is feeling when the host of one of their large broadcast partners is basically telling people, yeah, it's time to stop watching.
So who's going to boycott Al Sharpton now? We got to keep this circle going, right?
Keep the chain going. It's like a conga line. Dun, 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 dun.
I might boycott the NFL because I watched the Bears finally once this season on Monday Night Football last night. Man, that was hard to watch. Not because they lost, but because they're just bad. Really, really bad. So
I'm sorry to hear it. Look, the Trubisky era begins, Greg. We may have something to look forward to. Also, for all of the grief we've been giving the NFL, for all of our frustrations, Greg, didn't you feel good at halftime when we finally saw the NFL salute the troops? Admittedly, it was the troops of the First Order from Star Wars to tout that they were releasing the new trailer. But nonetheless, it's just nice to see a whole bunch of people standing for a bunch of marching troops, even if it is for a fictional evil empire remnant from a galaxy far, far away.
Well, step in the right direction, I guess. We'll see. Did you like the trailer?
I did. I'm sure the cute little critter, my 7-year-old, is going to buy like 14 of those. Basically, they said to Marvel, oh, you thought Baby Groot was cute? Fine. We'll see that and we'll raise you.
Jim, save up and get ready for that. Good luck up in New York today. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.